Forget Dis.
The Dis from Disabilities. I'm Emily Rellings.
And I'm Kayla Connick. We aim to change perceptions of people who are differently abled.
To do so, we interview those with unique challenges who have demonstrated that there is nothing dis about their abilities and provide valuable information on how to interact with and treat those around us.
We put new episodes out every couple of weeks. Check out all of our episodes on Patreon.
Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm great.
Good.
So you are in Oregon, right?
Yes, just south of Portland.
All right, cool. And you are a fellow music therapist.
I am. I'm one of Emily's former professors.
Nice. Okay, so that's the connection. Gotcha.
Yeah.
What's the music therapy scene like in Oregon?
Most of the music therapists in Oregon are working with the elderly or in mental health. I work primarily in pediatrics, autism, developmental disabilities, brain injury, that sort of thing.
It's kind of our area of focus here as well.
How long have you been a music therapist?
Since 1993, so 25 years.
All right, year I was born.
Oh, great. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm a youngin.
So tell us about your family.
I have three children. My eldest is 19. He has depression and anxiety and has a PTSD diagnosis. Then I have a 17-year-old who has severe neurological impairment, multiple impairment. He has upwards of 8 seizures a day. Though physically he is 17, cognitively he's about 2.5. Uses a wheelchair, has a G-tube, has a vagal nerve stimulator, all kinds of stuff going on. Then I have a 7-year-old. Because what happens in Las Vegas does not always stay there.
Nope, follows you.
He had an IEP for speech delays. He's got a lisp. And we've been having some behavioral challenges with him. And he's looking at probably an ODD or ADD diagnosis.
Okay.
Wow, so yay me, all IEPs.
Yeah. You know the IEP very well.
Yeah.
Personal and professional side, right?
That's right. Yeah, I've worn many, many hats around that same table.
Yeah, that must be interesting. Yeah, to be involved in all of those different ways and to know both sides.
Yeah. I've been part of the IEP team as a parent, as an advocate for my clients. And I've also been part of the IEP team as a related service provider, as a music therapist, as well as a special educator.
Wow. What is it like to balance all of those hats?
I just have to be really clear about what hat I'm wearing when.
Okay. And how do you do that?
Before the meeting, I remind myself why I'm there. What is the service that I am providing? What's the purpose of me being there? What difference does my voice make in that particular meeting for that child? It's all about the child that we're talking about in the IEP meeting. So yes. I orient myself to what difference am I making and what is my role? Okay. And what legally can I say and can I not say?
Yes.
There is that.
I know. So it is, good to remind yourself and orient yourself each time. But what a balance.
I'm curious, because you've been a music therapist for 25 years, and that was before your children came around, right?
Uh-huh.
I forgot about that previous degree.
Yeah, before I had my children, I had a master's degree in special education. I was an autism specialist. I had my sensory integration training. I was already in that world, and then bonus, I got my own. Doesn't mean that you're immune from giving birth to this population.
You know, it's interesting because I actually have a fear of it, even though I've been working with people with different abilities for many years, and I'm very comfortable working with them. I still have a fear of having a child in that situation.
That's totally normal, right? Because anything that's unknown evokes a fear response, right? Here's what I have to say about that. You're blessed with the children that you get.
Yeah, no matter what.
And then you just parent them. It really is that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And every child is different. And any time that you have a child, you figure out, how does that child learn? How does that child tick? What are the things that set them off? What are the things that they enjoy? What are the, you know, you do that with any child, right? So it's no different.
Yeah.
You're taking them to the doctor more often. Okay.
Yeah.
You're living in an apartment with wheelchair access and no stairs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Children enhance your life, regardless of who they are and what they can and can't do. It's your job as a parent to parent them and have them be the greatest human beings on the planet that they can be. Period.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that's a common theme that comes up in our podcast a lot is just it's normal in our own family unit. Whatever the situation is, it is our sense of normal.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing what you come to accept as normal.
Yeah. It expands you and your mind a little bit. They're kids. They're just kids.
That's right.
We were just having this conversation the other day about even as like a, not even as a mother, but just again, as a therapist, kind of like what you expect out of some of your younger clients, right? Thinking like, why aren't they kind of like what other parents expect and this and that, but still reminding yourself, hey, they're just kids. They're going to say some silly things. For neurotypical kids do that too.
That's right.
It's like to kind of say like, no, don't do that.
Just the other day I was in the grocery store and there was a child having a meltdown. Now, I don't know if that child is on the spectrum or has a diagnosis or not, but this mom was standing around and saying, you know, wow, when you're done with your fit, let's move on with our shopping. And she was just standing there and the child was throwing a fit. And I looked at the mom and I said, hey, good job, mom, stand your ground. And she goes, oh, thanks.
I know, because I think most people that encounter that in the public are like, oh, kind of roll their eyes and be like, this mom isn't doing enough or like she's doing too much. Or so it's like, oh, it's so nice for her to hear like, hey, you're doing a great job.
That is something that I realized in my experience being a mother over the last few years is it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to be judged by somebody.
Oh, totally. That's right.
It's like moms get more heat than like dads out in public. You notice that? I don't know. It's just kind of my perception too. It's like, oh, look at that dad. He's trying to be a dad. And then, you know, exact situation with the mother and they're like, oh, what is she doing? Why is she doing that? Get that kid under control. So nice for her to hear like, hey, yeah, you're doing a good job. So yeah, if you see a mom out in public, tell her she's doing a good job.
That's right. Especially for kids having a meltdown. Encourage her to hang in there. Hang in there.
Yeah. And like you said, stand your ground, mom.
That's right.
I'm curious because you've been working in the special education system, both in California and in Oregon, right?
And Utah.
Oh, that's right. In those three states, do you see some similarities and some differences in the school districts in the way that they handle IEP?
Absolutely. In the state of Oregon, music therapy is still not recognized in the education system. And when I was in California, I contracted with 11 school districts. And when I was in Utah, I contracted with 2, but that was simply because I worked full-time at a hospital, so I wasn't going to take on, you know, more. There's big differences in education. In Utah, children like my son, TJ, are segregated. He actually went to a separate school for children with disabilities. They're segregated, which is federally illegal, but, you know, whatever. apparently, they don't care about that there. But what was cool about that school was they had a therapeutic pool. They had a sensory room. They had some really unique things that you wouldn't get at just a regular full inclusion site. So one of the things that I love about the district that I live in Tualatin, Oregon, is it is a full inclusion school district. So even children like my TJ are fully included as much as absolutely possible. And that's just automatic. And I love that. I love that. I love that for so many reasons. So that is a difference. But as far as music therapy goes, yeah, we're still not in the school systems in Oregon as music therapists.
Is there any forward movement with that, with the licensure that's happened in the state?
Because we're licensed, we are seeing a little bit of forward movement, but it's slow going. Money is really tight, and Oregon is towards the bottom of the United States in the amount of money that they spend per student, and it's way towards the bottom for special ed students. So money is a thing. And so when you're looking at, certainly when you're looking at supplemental services, which are optional, our kids don't get those, period. A teacher may be given like $100 in discretionary funds for a year.
For the entire classroom.
That's right. So spending on education in Oregon is very low. And so that is always kind of the bugaboo that comes up, right? Mm-hmm. When you're looking at paying for services. And because music therapy is not widely recognized yet, you know, they're sticking with the well-known, tried and true OTPT speech as the only related services. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we're really committed to breaking through. That is how that looks right now.
It's something we're beginning to try to navigate in Clark County here in Nevada.
Yeah, because it's the same situation where we're not considered a related service. But, I mean, people have shown interest in getting music therapy in the classrooms, which is a start.
Yeah, what it takes is some parents to be really strong advocates. And then the other thing that it takes, and I'll say this out of my experience from when I was in California, because I ended up contracting with 11 school districts in California. Okay.
Quite a lot.
That's a lot, right? They talk to each other. The districts talk to each other. They may say, all right, we've got this quote unquote problem parent requesting a music therapy assessment. So they reach out to the other school districts, and then the other school districts say, look, you want Lilith Grand to do your assessment because she'll say no. What makes a really big difference is having the music therapist who does the assessment not afraid to say to those parents, no, or to say in the assessment, yes, music therapy is necessary, or no, music therapy is not necessary. And I actually developed a reputation for having integrity. When you operate as a music therapist and you say, yes, music therapy is necessary for this child to benefit from his or her special education, then you darn well better have evidence for that. When I operated with that level of integrity, and you know, sometimes it was because the IEP was poorly written.
Yeah, I haven't seen them for very long, but I've seen some atrocious ones.
Yeah, but then I call that out in the assessment, by the way. So when you operate with a really high level of integrity, then school districts entrust you. They trust you. Mm-hmm.
I know, like you said, it's got to be difficult sometimes to say no to a parent as a music therapist because we're so like, we just want to get ourselves out there.
There's not a single human being on the planet that couldn't benefit from music therapy.
But
exactly. When we're talking as a related service, then it's got to show necessary for that child to benefit from their special education. And, you know, if I can't show that, well, I can't show that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that there isn't benefit there for that child. And there were districts where I said no, and the district said, yeah, we're going to bring you on anyway. Sometimes just to shut the mother up, but sometimes also because they saw that there was more available that they could include in the IEP for that child based on my assessment. Just because you say no doesn't mean that that child's not going to get music therapy and related service.
But that's interesting that you found two like other things that they could benefit that they could write into the IEP based off of just what you saw in the music therapy.
That's right.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
Because you did see something and there is evidence to back it up.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the biggest challenges in our district here is that in our entire county, there is one school district.
Yeah.
The entire Las Vegas.
Huge. Millions of children,
Goliath, yeah.
That district for the last, I don't know, 20 years, maybe more, they've just been growing exponentially. They're just trying to keep up with the basic need.
Yeah. Desperate for teachers and like classroom size growth is insane. And just like the ratio is way off. Vegas will figure itself out. I don't know. The increased funding maybe will go to the right places. Yeah, we're hopeful.
So with all of your experience, Lilith, I would love to hear what your thoughts are on person-centered language versus people-first language.
I don't really care. I have a friend who says that they are, they're pansexual, right? Mm-hmm. So I call them they because that's their preference. Okay, guess what? I call you friend.
Yeah, I think it's really that simple.
What's natural for me is to use person with autism or person with cerebral palsy or like that. I never, ever use the language suffers from.
Oh,
that
yeah,
drives me nuts.
And I'm sure it drives them nuts too.
Who says that suffering, right? That's a story. Suffering. Yeah, by the way, suffering is a choice, right? And I'm not going to say whether it's suffering for somebody else or not. I tend to use person first language, but that's partially because that's how I was trained. So that's Abbott. That's my automatic go-to, right? But if I have a client with autism, see, I automatically say client with autism, and they say, no, I'm autistic. Okay, cool.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean the rest of them are necessarily autistic unless they specify.
I mean, that's like saying that every single person with red hair is going to be like the same, right? Or every blonde. Because I know Emily, now I know blondes.
Every blonde ever.
Yeah. One person with cerebral palsy is one person with cerebral palsy. Yeah. One person who wears glasses is one person who wears glasses. There's literally no difference. The politically safe thing to do is the person first language. Everything that we do is client-centered as music therapists. So then it's individual.
With all of your hats that you wear, what do you like to do for fun?
Yeah, let's talk about you.
What do I like to do for fun? I love to cook and I love to go dancing and karaoke and game nights. I love playing board games and card games and, you know, stuff like that.
Games are my favorite. I love games. What's your go-to karaoke song?
Well, I won $300 in Vegas once singing When Will I Be Loved by Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, yes.
Here for the Party by Gretchen Wilson is a go-to. It Happens by Sugarland. Actually, a bunch of Sugarland songs are kind of go-tos for me.
Nice. To go to like each karaoke bar I go to and always sing What's Up by Four Non-Blondes. Do you guys know which song I'm talking about? yeah, she knows. One of the ultimate karaoke songs. And you'll get like the whole room.
It is.
As drunk as they are, like singing with you, no matter what. Then it will sound terrible, but it will be so fun. What's your favorite go-to?
I haven't done karaoke in a while. And back when I had opportunity, I was too fearful to be up there. And now that I'm probably more comfortable, I'm not entirely sure. I've long realized that my repertoire as an individual is pretty much on the outside. I like lots of instrumental music. I would kill Disney karaoke, though.
There you go. Yeah.
Awesome.
No, I'd never do that outside of music therapy because I do it like the same songs 3 times a week. Right? So I need a break from that, from Disney.
How many times have you sang Let It Go in your career, though?
Oh, God. Yeah, you don't even want to know. Actually, I have a really funny song story, right, about when I was working in the hospital and there was this girl who had to get a PICC line. They couldn't sedate her because of her heart condition and she developmental disabilities and they needed music therapy to assist. But the only song that she would calm down to and watch me and hold still during this procedure, the only song, What Is Love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. By the way, that's the entire song.
Yeah, how do you get through that without laughing?
For 45 minutes.
I don't know if I could.
45 minutes.
What is love?
48 minutes of this procedure.
Dang, I guess those lyrics make sense, though. Don't hurt me.
The team was like, oh my God. And I would try a different song and she'd start to wiggle and then they'd start singing What Is Love so that I would
They're like, no, go back to that one.
Like, yes, right? Because she started to wiggle and oh my God, it was hell. It was hell. There I am, you know, this 40-something white woman with a guitar, which by the way, I'm playing the guitar in gown and gloves and mask and I'm singing this electro song, right? It's just like nonstop. And for weeks later, I would see the team in the hallway and all I'd have to do is like bob my head and then that song right back in their ear.
They're probably like, dang it.
Yeah.
Oh man. I don't know. That song reminds me too of that Rick Astley song, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Yes.
I haven't been asked for that one yet or had that be a preferred song. I recently had Dancing Queen, some ABBA, and I'm like, only a matter of time before I have to sing ABBA. Yeah, someday I'll probably be singing, What Is Love? Baby, don't hurt me. So
now it's going to be stuck in your head.
I know.
Sing it. Why? All day long.
I know.
Because I come from a very musical family, and my brother-in-law used to do something at our family events. Maybe he still does. I don't know. But he would just start humming like one phrase of something and then wait 10 minutes until somebody was in another room was singing it. Like, wait, why is that in my head?
It's like subliminal, yes. Like singing.
Do that all the time.
Totally plants it.
Lily, if there was one thing that you wanted people to know about anything, what are you super passionate about people hearing?
That our biggest obstacle is ourselves. That the biggest limitations that we have in life are self-imposed.
Yeah, get out of your own way. I've told myself that like on a daily basis most days. So
that's pretty much my life story.
Yep, get out of your own way.
Well, and that's why I participate in courses with Landmark, right? It's personal and professional development, and that company exists simply to empower people in what they're dealing with.
It's called Landmark.
Yeah, Landmark Worldwide. If you go to landmarkworldwide.com, you want to be unstoppable, you want to have power in any circumstance, and I mean any circumstance, you want to have peace of mind, regardless of what you're facing, that's why that company exists. So yeah, but the biggest obstacles that we have are self-imposed. Anytime you say, I am this way, it's a self-imposed limitation. Even if you say, I am compassionate, then all you can be is compassionate. It's limiting. I am, I don't know, stingy, or I am shy. That's what you're living into then. Great. You get to be right. Congratulations.
But yeah, just breaking free of those labels that maybe once weren't self-imposed, but then you start to kind of believe.
And if I say, well, I'm intimidated, then all of my actions are going to be completely consistent with being intimidated. I'm not intimidated. I have some feelings that I find intimidating, but those are just feelings. That's not who I am.
To clarify, like you can feel intimidated still, but you have to counteract that.
Your biggest limitations in life are self-imposed.
I love that.